Hello and welcome to Fantasy Talks Live, the podcast that came out of the Jose's Amazing World's YouTube channel. Original video recordings of all the episodes in the podcast can be found at Jose's Amazing World's in YouTube. Listeners beware, as plot spoilers can be discussed in any of the episodes in the podcast. And now, without further delay, enjoy the show. Moment where I think we are live now with slight communication issues, but we're ready to go. So, Robert, thank you very much for joining in the channel. Well, first of all, I suppose for anyone that doesn't know, why don't you introduce yourself, tell us what you do, what you're up to, while I get my beer sorted.
Sure. So I'm Robert Bone. I'm an indie author, and the point that I've reached now is kind of the culmination of about roughly 10 years of effort, just going from learning how to write a book, doing all the research for what goes into it, my options as an author, traditional versus independent, and just getting to the point where I felt good enough or decent enough to actually kind of put my book out into the world. So it's been a journey for sure.
Okay. So funny you should mention, because yesterday I was over at Susana Imaginario's channel. She's another indie author, and we were talking about our writing experiences. And she was asking me, I was asking her. So how did you decide, or at what point, how did you decide you had to write a book?
My decision to start writing really kind of came from not knowing what else to do. I went to college, I tried a few different things. Nothing really hit with me. Nothing that I felt like I really wanted to do for the rest of my life. Right. And, so I didn't fully graduate in one school that I went to. And then I went to video game design school, which was really great, and it was something that I absolutely loved, but I live in the middle of the US, and all the game studios are on coasts, so that wasn't really an option, and it was unfortunate that I found that out after I graduated. But after that, I kind of fell into I had always loved stories. I'd always loved telling stories, even though I wasn't very good at it. It was just something that was kind of, oh, this, you can come up with neat things, neat characters, and neat story situations. And so eventually I reached the point, well, why don't I just give it a try and see what happens? And as I did, you know, I found a mentor at a local library writers group, and we talked, she taught me a whole bunch, and I was able to progress enough where I really realized that, hey, this is really fun and I really enjoy it, and it has the potential to have it be a career choice. How far that goes, you know, I don't know, I'm still figuring that out.
Yeah. So you've chosen to write fantasy. Is there a love of fantasy that comes from earlier? Are you like, I don't know, for me, like Dungeons and Dragons was the gateway into this rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. How do you end up writing fantasy? What was the story behind that?
Yeah. So mine was actually video games.
Right.
Growing up, I played things like Skyrim, Dragon Age, some others, and there was always something about that, just the originality, the transporting to a whole different world that really just latched on, or that I latched onto, and that I loved it. And so I think that was where that primarily came from. I didn't read a whole lot when I was younger. You know, I read things like Lord of the Rings in high school. I need to go back and reread that because I probably didn't understand half of it just because of the sheer complexity that Tolkien puts in his writing. But yeah, that's where a lot of it came from, just video games.
And so is The Condemned your first book?
Yes. Yeah.
How long did that take you to write? Because you are in the, I believe you are in the fatherhood brotherhood, isn't it? You've got a family, you've got kids, presumably you've got a job. Like, I gave up writing when my first son was born. Like, I didn't have time for it. How do you manage that? How long did it take?
Oh, it took quite a while. My wife is actually a teacher, was for about 9 years. And I did work for a while. You know, I worked retail while trying to still figure everything out. And so I probably started, the first draft was probably completed around 2014, 2015, maybe.
Right.
And so as I wrote some other things and as I worked and studied trying to understand everything, I kept going back to it. And so I completed it, and then I did some editing, and then I would go back to it after another year or two, and then I would go through it again. I did that two or three times probably, just trying to put my current skill level back into it. And it's still, everybody says, don't write your first book or don't try to publish your first project. And, man, I did it anyways. And I know from experience that I shouldn't have, because there's some fundamental things that are wrong with it. The story, there's some things that if I completely redid it now, it would look a lot different. It was under a different name at one point. It's about 6 years worth of efforts, of rewrites, of editing and trying to get it.
No, I hear you and I totally understand. But the problem is you will never finish a book otherwise. Like when I wrote my first novel, I think I wrote it, and it took years, and then I did some editing, whatever. I think at some point, and it was like maybe a couple of years after, either it was before or after, because I sent it to an editor to check, you know, the spelling and grammar and issues like that. And then when it all came back and I thought that the book was done, I think like I added an extra chapter. And the problem is you will never finish. So yeah. I had a friend who used to say, whatever project you embark on, just get it to 80% and then move on to the next thing. Because otherwise you will never finish what you're doing. And you could be rewriting your book potentially forever.
Yeah.
And you know, like exactly the same thing I was talking to Susanna yesterday. You know, Sanderson, I think his first published novel was his 10th one or something like that.
Right.
And J.K. Rowling got rejected by every single publisher in the UK, except for the last one.
Yeah.
So it's, I think making that final, or trying to make that final step, it is complicated. And that's another reason why I kind of stopped trying to publish my books. I wrote in Spanish, but I was living in the UK at the time. So it's the time investment to send it to book awards, you know, go down to fairs, and basically the whole promotion side of things, that you think that writing is, you finish and you're done. I'm probably writing the book is only 40% of the job.
Yeah. That sounds about right. There's a lot more that goes into it than just putting down the words, and it's trying to find that balance where you, or rather that cutoff point where you can look at it and say, okay, this is as done as I can get it. That's a challenge. It's hard to find.
Yeah, absolutely. So where are you at with another book is on Amazon, but are you still trying to send it to publishers? Are you still trying to get an agent or something like that? Where are you at with that process?
So at this point, I have, by and large, left my efforts to go traditional, simply because, you know, there's always that potential. There's always that possibility. But I got tired of not being able to put my work out there, for one, to just see where I stand, where my capability is as an author. And when you're bogged down trying to send out query letters and trying to get attention from agents and publishers, that just can't happen. And then I saw a lot of things where agents look for specific things. And then this idea of it has to fall within their subjective taste, which is perfectly legitimate. You know, you don't want an agent who kind of likes your book. You want an agent who absolutely loves your book. Mm-hmm. At the same time, that can make it really difficult to get someone's attention. Because the overall objective quality doesn't always matter. It has to fall within their subjective tastes. And so it's this dichotomy that is legitimate and I understand it, but at the same time, I don't want to limit myself by only allowing myself to put my work out there if I get picked up by an agent.
Yeah, I mean, it's a complicated industry. There's a lot of gatekeeping going on, but also I think it's the willingness to put in the time to find where your book may be best placed. I've been approached, I don't know what's happened this year, before you approached me to review your book, someone else did, and I had a look around the publishers that they put out the book through. And turned out to be basically it's an only women outfit, and they kind of write fantasy, but they want, you know, it's quite heavy on the romance, and they're looking specifically for LGBT characters and that sort of edge there. So there must be like specific niches of fantasy where your book might fit in and you may get a better chance of being published. And then just last week, someone else approached me to review the book, and they sold it to me. It's a Christian fantasy. And I'm like, Christian fantasy? Like, what the fuck's that? So I'm going to read it now next week, but I'm curious to see what Christian brings to fantasy. But anyway, so and I think it got published, and it won some award or whatever. I need to look more carefully into it. But there seem to be a lot of pockets, and there must be a huge time investment to investigate, research around, and find the best place for your book. And again, I don't know if you've spent already a long time trying to go down the traditional route, you may have sort of burnt your fingers and given up on the notion. I don't know.
Yeah, that's about right. And you know, that's not me knocking anybody who wants to go that route, right? That's a perfectly legitimate way to go. And people can find success that way. It's just for me, and maybe that's to my detriment, right? Maybe that is a bad thing that I've decided to do, trying to step away from traditional publishing or trying to get my book published and going the indie route. Because, you know, when you're working with agents, when you're working with publishing houses, you have all that backing. You have all those professionals who are looking at your book multiple times over, getting it to a very high quality bar. And that's not me excusing my own mistakes within my book, because I know that, you know, you really have to find an editor, find somebody who has a good eye for that and who can fix those mistakes that you have. But yeah, it's just something I had to step back from, partially for my own sanity. It was starting to get frustrating and depressing. And I think through my efforts trying to go traditional, that made me want to quit more than almost anything else I've encountered.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think there's also an element to something that I mentioned in the review, and I could be totally off the mark here, but I suspect that an agent or a publisher, even if they like your book, I don't mean you specifically, but any aspiring author, even if they like your work, they want to see continuity. And if you've got the first part of a trilogy or a book series or wherever, and they go, well, where's the follow-up? Well, I haven't started yet. And it's going to take you another 3-4 years to get it done. That may put agents, publishers off, which is why I mentioned that sometimes you want your first book, even if it's part of a series, to work as a standalone. That's one idea. Or a lot of people, what I've seen some people succeed in doing is maybe start with short stories, get them publishing them in anthologies or magazines or whatever, and get some kind of gravitas and some kind of clout before pushing your big opus. It's all very tactical. It's not just, you know, you have this great idea, I'm going to write this big fantasy series. But if you actually want to see it put out there as a product, you have to think a lot more tactically and a lot more business-like, which I suppose a lot of writers just don't. You learn that as you go along.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, again, that's one of those things that I should have done, because that was really the first story that I had. And me going ahead and writing it was probably the biggest mistake that I could have done. And, you know, I did, one of the things that mentor I mentioned earlier told me was, okay, you've got this first story. Now, instead of trying to go publish it, write a different story that stands alone, but is related to the same universe. And so I did that. That's the second book that you probably saw. Which is actually the backstory of the Sovereign, of Timlin, the city. And so I did that, and I'll admit, I learned a lot. I learned a lot from doing that. I learned better pacing, better story cohesion, rather than kind of having everything going this way and that, as I did in The Condemned. So, you know, that's something that I continue to try to bring forward. And at this point, I'm always questioning whether or not I should continue writing in this fantasy series or if I should just go write other stuff. You know, at this point, I feel like I've gotten a fairly good grasp on my writing skill, but at the same time, maybe I would benefit from writing more standalones.
I think that something I kind of kicked myself after putting the video there, which is what, when I was editing, I added the scrolling text because I actually liked your writing style. I think it was, I don't know what's the word, it was professional level. Like it was really good writing. The only thing that let me down when I was reading it was the formatting issues when I transferred the file into my Kindle. And you know, like some minor punctuation and spellings, but the actual writing I thought was good. Like I've probably read worse stuff from traditionally published books than that. So I think there's certainly the potential in there.
Well, thank you.
One last thing to talk about publishing, and then we can sort of discuss some aspects of the book. But when I wrote my book, like I sent it to a couple of awards, thinking, you know, that I was going to win and all the stuff, whatever. But I actually got offered sort of co-publishing deals. So these are kind of smaller publishing houses where you kind of got halves on the printing publishing costs. So What happened was we will go halves on the money. And I think at the time I could have afforded it. I thought it was too much of an ego trip to put down a couple of grand, but they would guarantee that my book would make it to the shelves of like your sort of nationwide bookshops, whatever the equivalent of that is in the US, Barnes and Noble or whatever it is, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you could imagine that someone says to you, Robert, you know, we'll go halves, this book, 2,000 each, your book will make it to, we guarantee you it's going to be in Barnes and Noble. Like, that would be a real kick. But then I was thinking, well, yeah, the book will be on the shelf. I said, who's going to pick it up? Like how? And I was very tempted, but again, I wasn't living in Spain. I wasn't going to be there to go around the book fairs or the book conventions to peddle my wares, so to speak. So I decided not to, but maybe something like that does exist. And maybe, you know, I don't know, you might enjoy a few trips away from the wife and kids going to different book cons or whatever.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. What are those called? I think there's a name for them. I don't know. But anyways, yeah. And I've thought about that kind of thing.
But you're going to be willing to get out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the things I tried to do a little bit more this year is go to conventions or go to places that'll let dealers set up tables to sell books. And the one that I went to so far, it was okay. I sold maybe about 5 copies, maybe 6, somewhere in there. And that's one of the things that I've discovered is that just being present personally has a different effect than trying to sell things online or just having them in the bookshelves, because if people don't know who you are, I feel like audience members need to know who you are as an author to some degree in order to determine whether or not they're going to pick up your book. Maybe that's wrong. I'm not sure, but
go on, sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. I was just going to say I've sold way more copies from personal connections than I ever have online.
Because I see that a lot in comic conventions. So every year I go to one or two. So when I was in London, I used to go to the London Comic Con. And there, with comics, you see there's a lot of independent comic publishers, and they are there. And they're going round. Like, I used to go down south in Portsmouth, London, up in Manchester, and you would see the same faces in all these comic cons. So this is people that are writing, drawing, publishing their comics, and they are literally traveling the country, and they're actually selling, they're building their presence through being there. And I would have never come across or discovered these comics unless I have gone to the cons. And actually, I do keep buying stuff from them. But you know, you, and then obviously then you find the website, then it makes it easier. But like in your experience, when you're an aspiring author, you have to be willing to be a bit of a backpacker, you know, crates of your books on the trunk of the car, and, you know, go around the state to different book fairs or different conventions, and you're not only an author, you also have to be a bit of a salesman.
Right. Definitely. And that's something I've never been good at. I hate feeling like I'm pressuring someone to do something or to pick something up.
I hear you. I like last year at my local Comic-Con here in Valencia, there was an author there. He had like all his books, he had like 5 or 6 different books, whatever. And you know, like I got talking to him, and you know, I needed to buy his book, like I need an extra hole in the body, right? And he started talking to me, he started doing the sale, and he wanted to get me to buy book one of his series. And I was like, no. Like, I'm not going to buy book one of a series. I said, I'll buy that other book that you've got, like a standalone horror book, whatever, but I'm not going to buy book one of a series. And they got, you know, it was really nice. Like you said, talking to the guy, he signed the book, you know, dedication, all the stuff. So that personal connection makes the selling easier. But oh my God, it was an awful book. Like I reviewed it and I had to say it, like this, it was horrendous. It was terrible. And I feel really bad. No, I don't feel really bad. You know, but I paid the money, so I've got the right to say I didn't like it. And
definitely.
And these are my reasons. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Do you envision yourself having 2-3 books there, like your trilogy, and then going round?
Yeah, the hard part is that these conventions, they always cost money, right? They always cost something to go set up a table and be there. And so I've looked around, and it's, I don't know. I live near Kansas City, which is kind of a huge metropolitan area. And so there's always opportunities. It's just finding the time, especially with kids and a wife. And
the old Chester.
Yeah. Yeah. And just making the time for it. And so I'm not sure. It's something that I want to do more, because I know making those connections again is important. It's just finding those venues, finding that time to get it to work.
So how do you find time to write?
Right. So as I mentioned, I did used to work, but my wife got a new job, and I'm in the extremely fortunate position where this can be my full-time thing. So she is able to provide for the rest of us at the moment. And I, you know, during the school year, I'll take my kids to school and, you know, pick them up and all that. But in between that, I stay home, write, work on the business side of things. And
all right. That's a very fortunate position to be in. How old are your kids?
They are 7 and 11.
Okay. So mine are 8 and 5. Well, okay. Soon to be 5. And I tell you, when they're home, it's a full-time job. Like
Definitely. Yeah. They require a lot of attention, especially the younger they are.
Yeah. So, like I said, when they were born, I had to choose like the things I enjoy doing with my time. Then I had to discard a few things and just make choices and sacrifices. And writing was the thing that went out the door. But so, again, this is something I was talking to Susanna yesterday. And we both agreed that sort of habit makes, it's just like everything. It just practice makes you better. Have you got a writing, like a Stephen King habit? Like, do you sit down and say, I'm just going to write 500 words a day? Doesn't matter how good they are, how bad they are. If I just get 500 words down every day, then you can just do rewrites or chop and change or whatever. Do you find that, or is that difficult? Or?
It is. And everybody's got their own style. You know, everybody's got their own kind of process to do these things. For me personally, though, my tendency at least has been to get a book done. And when I'm actually working on drafting out a new story, that's when I'll sit down and I'll get all my words out. And if I'm lucky, I can get about 2,000, 2,500 words done a day. And then once that's done and I go into the editing phase, that's where it trips me up, because I'll have an idea of where I'm going with the story, and then I'll put it aside for a little bit so that it kind of goes out of my mind. I bring it back, and then I go through and do story edits, because for me, I have to stay zoomed out, fixing big story issues, pacing. And then once that's kind of all done, I'll zoom in and take care of like sentence structure and make sure it sounds good, reading it out loud as I'm editing and that kind of thing. Right now I'm kind of in this point where I'm trying to edit something and also write something new. So that doesn't work for me because I'm not good at multitasking. I have to focus on one project first and complete that. And then my brain can move on to something else. So it just kind of depends on where I'm at in the whole process. If I'm distracted between two things, or if I only have one thing going and can focus on that.
But so how often does that happen? Because you say 2,000 words, 1,000 words a day, you have a book every 3 months. I mean, that's pretty impressive. Do you plan out your book? Like, do you know where you're starting, what your key points and what the ending is? Or do you start writing and let the story grow organically and see where that takes you?
It's usually the latter. I know there are, what's the term? I think it's plotters versus pantsers.
I think George R. R. Martin calls it, like, he's a gardener.
So I fall more on the gardener side. I'll sit down if I know where my ending is, if I know what I want to end up happening near the end, then I can sit down and basically fill in everything from there. There's some things that I have to figure out, especially when dealing with fantasy, because you have to understand what your magic system is. You have to understand its limitations. You have to understand your world. And so there's definitely things that I'll write out and plan for and make sure that I, as the author, understand. But once kind of those basic building blocks are there, I can sit down and I can just tell the story as it comes to me, basically.
Yeah. I mean, this I found, because I wrote two novels and two horror story collections, and I found I was more of a gardener with the novels. I kind of knew where they were going, but sometimes scenes or characters, they take you someplace. With the horror stories, because it's a shorter story and it's just an idea, I found them easier to write because I knew where I was going to and how I was going to get. 90% of the time, I knew how I was going to get there. A couple of times, I wrote myself into a corner and it was like, oh shit, I've got two options here. I really, really got to think about this or discard this story. And I could never bring myself to discard something I had written. Like, I would work on it. Or there was one particular story that I couldn't figure out the ending, how I was. And then I emailed it to a friend and he finished it for me. He gave me the climactic ending, and that was great. And I've always asked him to, you know, we should write more together, but he never did. So I don't know where I was going with it. I was just totally digressing here. So would you, one of my suggestions, like, would you write like shorter stories to add to your world, like little like novellas, or are you still sticking to the main books of the world you're creating?
That's a good question. I don't know. I feel like there's certainly value in those shorter stories. And I have done that in the past, and then kind of put them up as free reading on a website that I used to have. And actually I'm building a new website. So maybe with that, that'd be something that would be useful to do. just writing shorter stories that still connect to the world, but, you know, are just that shorter slices of story. I don't know if I'd go exclusively to that, but, you know, still writing those big novels as well.
Let's talk a little bit about the book, because, I mean, what did you think, consciously or subconsciously? I don't know, subconsciously would be hard to figure out. Like, what were your influences? Because I got, to me, it felt like a fairly classic in feel fantasy story. There were elements there that you don't see in anything written post 1995. The fact that you've got clearly magical weapons or almost sentient swords, it sort of gave me Elric vibes, sort of very classic fantasy, which is not in vogue these days. What do you think influenced you in that direction?
I'm not sure. Maybe part of it was my own inexperience. Because as I said, like, I haven't read a whole lot, and that's one of my downfalls as an author. I'm trying to fix that now.
That could be an advantage, because you, you know what I mean? Like, no, if you come up with something, you can honestly say it was your imagination. You weren't ripping off X author. But anyway, sorry.
Right. No, you're good. It could be. But like I said, I think a lot of my, because a lot of my, I've lost the word, my influence for fantasy in general has been from video games, and maybe because video games work a different way in storytelling, maybe that kind of translated to the book.
And I think, yeah, maybe video games are by their nature more fantastical. Like, you can get away with a lot more magic in video games, and no one questions it. Whereas these days, it seems to be the case that nobody likes magic in their fantasy, which to me, it's a contradiction of terms.
Sure. Yeah. I think you have to, maybe not have to, but there has to be some kind of magical element, something outside of our own realm of understanding, right? But it seems to me, at least, that current culture, that there's the way that magic works, there has to be more of an explanation to it. It has to be more of a, I think they call it hard magic system, where there are rules, there are things that have to be done in order to make the magic work. And I feel like mine kind of falls more in that soft magic, where sort of anything can go, depending on some factors, but it's multifaceted, multi-use.
No, you're right. And I strongly point the finger, and I do blame Brandon Sanderson for the current trend of hard magic systems, because... His magic, it's not magic, it's performance enhancing drugs. Like, they literally snort, inject, take whatever, some chemical, and then they acquire some special power that works in a very specific way temporarily. Like, that's, it's just, you know, performance enhancing drugs. The only magic system, like hard magic system, that I really enjoyed was the one in Lightbringer by Brent Weeks. But that was, it was a very specific thing that I really liked. But in general, I tend to dislike hard magic systems, because they're all the same thing. It's like steroids. You're taking drugs to become stronger, faster, fly, whatever.
Right.
I miss a good old spell, you know, a little pocket dimension like you had in your book. Like, that's cool. Yeah, that's magic I can get on board with.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think not having read did give me some advantages in that respect, because I don't know what's out there. I don't know what's out there as much as other people who are constant voracious readers, and I definitely did my best to let just my imagination wander, just let it go, just come up with something ridiculous and then make it work within the story and see what happens.
That's right. This is an interesting point then. So So what fantasy series of books have you read? Two things. So number one, what fantasy book series have you read that you're familiar with? And what books or series have you not read that everyone's talking about in the fantasy community that you may feel that is like a glaring gap in your fantasy knowledge? Because I think that's what gives you a slight unique edge there.
Yeah. So the ones I'm familiar with is Lord of the Rings, though it's been a while. I have read Harry Potter. I've read the first two books in Brandon Sanderson's Stormlight Archive. And as far, trying to think of what else. I've read a couple of historical, what do they call it? Not historical fantasies, but historical fiction. One book that my wife was interested in, she wanted me to read it, so I did.
As you do. Well done.
Yep. So I think some of the ones that I haven't read that I really might be a glaring miss is that I haven't read Wheel of Time, although I have started on it.
We'll talk about it in a second. Carry on.
Okay. What else? I've always heard a lot of things about the Poppy Wars. I haven't read that. I don't know. What else are kind of the main things now?
Realm of the Otherlings.
Yeah. Haven't read those.
Malazan.
Nope.
No, everyone's talking. Yeah. So you've read Lord of the Rings, you've read Harry Potter, you're doing well. Do not, like, Wheel of Time, leave it. Do yourself a favor.
Leave it.
Do yourself a favor. I did it so you don't have to. It's basically my take on the Wheel of Time.
Fair enough.
Each to their own. I don't know. If you enjoy it.
Can I ask what about it is?
Oh, it's too long a story. I've got a full 20-minute video dissecting it, but it's awful. Everything bad. Everything's bad. The characters are bad. There's no motivations. There's no antagonists. It's rubbish. I do not understand the Wheel of Time. I think the only series that I think I would recommend someone, or at least the first one, two trilogies, is The Realm of the Otherlings by Robin Hobb. Purely because her character work, to me, is second to none. Like, she is really good. She's fantastic at creating memorable characters, but giving them motivations. So you understand why a character would do something or not do something. And it's not for everyone, but I mean, I think the series is about 14 books or something like that. I can't remember now. And in each trilogy, she might spend a good 400 pages just giving you the background of the main characters in the trilogy and really setting out what they are like, how they behave. And you finish the book and you go, well, nothing's happened. But you've got to know the main players. You know the motivations, you know what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, why they're going to do it. And then off you go to the races. So I think Robin Hood for me is really good at that.
Okay.
Other than that, I think there's a lot of fantasy these days. I think you're very brave for writing fantasy because the way I see it, I think it's a little bit saturated at a time where there seems to be a lot of people writing and not enough people reading.
Sure. Yeah.
But I really enjoyed your main character, not spoiling anything, Baldane, who is not... how do you pronounce it?
Yeah, that's right. You got it.
Okay.
Perfect.
It's a very non-conventional main character. Where did the idea for that come from? Just so people that don't know, so main protagonist is a walking skeleton that kills everything he touches, right? That's mm-hmm. yep. When you sent me that email with that, or I saw like the blurb for the book, it was like, I want to read that. Like, that really got my attention.
Cool. Yeah. I'm not sure where kind of the original idea came from, or what spawned it, but very early on, I think even before I started writing, I had drawn this picture. I was a little bit into art. I had drawn this picture of just this skeleton stepping over a tree branch, but he puts his hand on for stability, and it starts like decaying and falling apart. And so from there, I was like, that would be a really cool main character for a story. And so I took that drawing and made a story out of it. Go ahead.
No, sorry. Continue. Sorry.
I was just going to say that I don't know where the original idea came for that drawing, but the story was spawned off of that drawing.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. And it's a bit of a juxtaposition with if you're familiar with the Swamp Thing, the saga of the Swamp Thing written by Alan Moore, where so the story of the Swamp Thing is this scientist becomes infected / whatever, affected by some chemicals. He falls in the swamp and he becomes the Swamp Thing, and he's trying to regain his humanity, right? Which is a bit like Bolden is mm-hmm. doing in your book. But when Alan Moore inherited the series, he decided that no, like the scientist died, and it's only like the consciousness that has taken this sort of Swamp Thing form. And he was not interested in the character regaining his humanity, because once that story was done, you're out of, that's it, your story's told. Whereas he thought, well, what if it's this thing? Then the possibilities are endless. I can just take him wherever I want and do what I want. So, not to put thoughts in your mind, but what if Bolden never recovered his humanity? I don't know.
Interesting. Anyway, yeah.
Well, you know, what if he came to some realization that, I don't know, he was never human to begin with, or he was created like that? And then what happens there with the power that he's got? Anyway, just putting it out there.
Yeah. You know, I've fleshed out the story enough to know that I know what's going to happen at the end, and I know why he's a skeleton. I'm not, no spoilers.
No. And I don't mean to tell you how to write your book. No, sorry about that.
No, but that would be interesting. That would create some, I think that would definitely open up a lot of possibilities on where I could take the character if I went that route.
And it would be an interesting question, maybe some kind of exploration for a different story, isn't it? If your main character realized that he was this hideous thing with some sort of obscene power, what's the morality there? What would they do? Would they, you know, turn evil, or would they, like, I don't know. There's all these questions there that maybe there's no answer to, but it's worth exploring.
Yeah, definitely. And that was, sorry. That was one of the hard things that I realized when I started writing the story, is that having someone who doesn't really know who they are and who has essentially a blank slate character, how do you do character development with that? And that's one of the questions that I really had to answer as I was writing the story and try to figure it out.
The only thing I suppose the only thing I didn't like about the book, not that I didn't like, but the one thing is the love relationship that kind of forms at the end type thing. I don't know. I wasn't too sure about that.
Sure. Yeah.
Let's just put it that way. Sometimes I think in some books, I'm trying to think of an example in the Gunpowder Mage trilogy by Brian McLennan. You can see that there's going to be this love relationship forming, because it seems like it's a box we have to take, that we have to have a love relationship, a love interest. But it was just so unbelievable and so shoehorning that I wish it hadn't even happened. And I'm not sure, and being slightly sexist here, that men that men tend to write decent love relationships. I don't know how you feel about that aspect of...
You said they do tend to?
The men tend to not write very good. Sort of the romance bit, men tend to not in general. And I think that's why, was it Joe Abercrombie, when he writes, he doesn't write romance, he just writes like dirty sex scenes, like dirty as in disgusting, not like, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know. How did you approach that? Did you feel like...
I'm not sure. You know, honestly, looking back at it, that's always a question of whether or not I should have even attempted that, because I was still coming at it from my... this was my first book.
Mm.
And one of the things that I clearly did was that I tried to jam too much into one story. And especially romance, I'd say you're right. I don't think in general men tend to write poor romance. And I probably did it just because I thought I should, rather than really looking at the story.
To be honest, I don't think... I think it would work. It just needed to happen later. I think, like you said, maybe you tried to cram too much in your first book. I think there wasn't enough moments between those two characters to make that plausible or believable. But maybe something that could sort of... it just needed more time to breathe and grow a bit more organically. That's...
yeah.
So sorry about the criticism there.
No, I know some people get uptight about criticism. I am not one of those people, because this is what I want to do, because taking other people's feedback will help me grow. And so I am perfectly okay with that. And most of the things that people criticize my book for, I already look at as something that I could have done better. But not always, because, you know, some people look at something and say, well, you know, this part here, it's a little weird. And I'm like, right, you're right. It is. Yeah. And so,
like, I'll give you an example of a recent book. I'm reading the Sun Eater series by Christopher Roque here. And in there, I think it was at the end of, the series is not finished. I'm due to pick up book 4 at some point. But there's a romance that you can see coming, but he doesn't get it going straight away. So he lets it grow. And I think it's only by somewhere halfway book 2 or something like that, that the two characters get together. And I think that sometimes, even if as an author, one is not very adept at writing romance, if something that you've hinted at, you just delay it. Like when you finally get it, even if it's not very well executed, just simply the fact that you've delayed it and let it simmer there for a bit, you just got the reader invested, because they can see it coming and they want it to happen, but you just delay that gratification for later. And I think that worked well in the Sun Eater series. But
interesting.
Okay. It's just a passing thought.
Yeah.
Anyway, Robert, I think I'm really grateful that you came here today to talk about your book. I'm very grateful that you actually approached me in the first place. I'm actually, honestly, can say I'm glad that I read it. And if book two sees the light of day at some point, I'll be more than willing and happy to read it as well, because I'm curious to see where it goes. I think you've captured the essence, or you've given me sort of memories of classic fantasy that is, I think, missing quite substantially in the present landscape. So thank you for that.
Definitely. Thank you. Thanks for, again, for picking it up and for giving it a read and for having me on to discuss it today. So I really appreciate it.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Thank you, anyone that is watching, well, was watching this earlier or is going to watch it later. Robert, anywhere where people can find your book or your website or channel or anything?
My YouTube channel is The Right Stuff Official, I think, is the handle for it. And I'm on Facebook. On Facebook and I think Twitter, I have it under Ravenfell Entertainment, because that's the company that I published my books under. But other than that, I don't have my website out quite yet, but it'll be eventually coming out.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. And thank you, everyone. Take lots and lots of care, and we'll see you soon. Bye.